Welcome to the NOLA Drink Show. Join us as we explore the world of drink, food, and culture in New Orleans and beyond. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody, welcome to the show. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for tuning in to the NOLA Drink Show this week, friends. I do appreciate it. As always, I hope everyone out there is as well as they can be, you and yours included. Hopefully everyone is also being a good citizen and doing what they're supposed to be doing, maintaining social distancing, listening to competent authorities, paying attention to the science, helping our family, our friends, our neighbors as we can, being mindful of those who are alone and isolated and don't deal with it so well. That includes our friends who may be battling addiction. Be sensitive to those things. Be supportive. Try and connect when you can. Try and exercise when you can. And try and have some fun when you can. And hopefully, we've done some serious shows lately. We've done some fun stuff. Last week's show was great. Go check it out for some tips on some effective home bar ideas there with Donnie Ronan, and also a great conversation with Jackie Summers. If you didn't hear that, you can always go to the website, noladrinks.com, and get the podcast directly from our website, or just go to your favorite podcast platform and put in NOLA Drinks or the NOLA Drink Show, and it should pop up because we're on most of them. Got a great show coming up for you here today. I've got two good presidents, not like the one crappy one, two really good presidents. Our first guest is Leah Hoyt, and Leah is the president of the New Orleans Concierge Association. We talked to her a bit about just, you know, concierges in general, what the association does here, which I think is applicable to most other locations. And we talk a bit about the hotel industry with a bit of a focus here on New Orleans, but I think, you know, kind of some similar ideas, and also just a sort of a read on what she's hearing from her colleagues in the concierge world, as well as some of her colleagues at the hotel where she works or was working, has now been furloughed, as she tells us. But we get into that in a little bit, and hopefully she's back in action there pretty soon, as we all hope we're back in action there pretty soon. And the second president that we have on is our pal Maggie Campbell, and Maggie is a person of many, many, many talents. The presidency comes from her role as the head distiller and president of Privateer Rum up there in Massachusetts, but she's also on the board of directors for the Craft Spirits Association and American Craft Spirits Association, and she's the vice president of the board there, so she's a president and a vice president, beekeeper, sign language instructor, all kinds of other things, and we get into that. We talk with Maggie a bit about what she does. We talk a bit about Privateer Rum, how they've adapted to assist in the coronavirus fight. We talk about the craft spirits industry a little bit in the association. And then Maggie sticks around for another Shot with NOLA Drinks, which is our podcast-only segment that you can only get via podcast, right? That's why it's called the podcast-only segment. I'm pretty quick, okay? Stay with me. But yeah, we want to encourage you to go get the podcast if you're listening here on the radio, because that's the only place that you're going to hear our extended chat, again, called Another Shot with NOLA Drinks. And this time it'll be Maggie Campbell sticking around. So yeah, friends, stay tuned. We're going to take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show. When we come back on the other side, we'll first chat with Leah Hoyt from the New Orleans Concierge Association. And then after that, we'll chat with Maggie Campbell. Come on back. Show Brian Diaz here. Thanks for listening to the NOLA Drink Show, friends, this week. I do appreciate it. As you know, strange times indeed. We've been talking about all things, I shouldn't say all things, but many things that relate to the world of drink, food, culture, hospitality industry, so on and so forth, as it relates to the coronavirus. It's dominating everybody's thoughts, and you know, of course, we're going to talk about it here on the show. And pleased to bring on my next guest and good friend, Leah Hoyt. Leah, how are you?
I'm great, Brian. How are you?
I'm doing okay. Thanks for making time. I know we were kind of laughing about this the other day. Time is one of the things that we seem to have, well, an ample amount of these days.
Absolutely. A lot more than anyone anticipated a month ago, that's for sure.
Right. And I want to tell listeners, so I mentioned this at the top of the show, of course, but Leah is a concierge in town here, and importantly, also the president of the New Orleans Concierge Association. And actually, Leah, briefly tell people what a concierge is, and actually, would you tell people what the NOLA Concierge Association, what y'all do?
Absolutely. So concierges across the world primarily are in lobbies of hotels. We really are ambassadors to our cities. You know, I spend my days professionally talking to guests about restaurants, telling them, you know, museums, tours, anything, culture, arts, food, music, you know, all of it. So basically, I have the coolest job ever because I get to talk about all the wonderful things of New Orleans all day, every day. You know, there's a lot for guests to see and do, so I kind of help them make the most of their time and organize everything from, you know, swamp tours to dinner reservations.
Yeah.
And then we have the New Orleans Concierge Association, which is an association of hotel-employed concierges from all around the city. And we have a few different events we do. Each month we have a meeting at the end of the month, which is concierges only, where we get together and talk about, you know, business, but then also make plenty of time to talk about tours and restaurants and kind of share that information. And then a big component of the Concierge Association is networking. So we have what's called the New Orleans Concierge Association Mixers, and that's our corporate affiliates, which are, you know, run the gamut from different parts of the hospitality industry and tourism in the city. And those mixers could be at a lot of, you know, restaurants, bars, museums, kind of a little bit of anywhere that, you know, within the city that's willing to host us. And we get together with our corporate affiliates, and you know, it's just a great time to face to face, get to spend more time with each other, and it's great for the concierges to get out and try new places, but also for our corporate affiliates to really spend some quality time and getting to know each other on a professional and personal level.
Yeah, I was just going to say, because I think that also gives you guys an opportunity to get out and check out some of the places, right, and know what's out there, because that's a critical part of your
absolutely.
Job. Because you actually said something that I really appreciate. You said at the beginning that concierges are found in the lobbies of hotels, but I recall a story, because the last time I actually saw you in person, which was probably about 3-4 months ago, right? Something like that. You were telling me a story about how you actually got up really early in the morning and waited in line for a couple guests to get them get them tickets to the Stones, I think, when they were here for Jazz Fest last year.
Right.
And I'm like, so you're not always found in the hotel lobby. Sometimes, like, you're in a line at 5 a.m. trying to score somebody tickets to the Stones, man.
Yeah, it's definitely, I think every concierge has a handful of stories, like their little arsenal of crazy things that they've done for the guests. But waking up and going down to the Superdome at 4:35 in the morning, when they originally were supposed to play at Jazz Fest, and buy tickets for some of our VIP guests, that was top the list, one of the crazier things. But it just kind of goes to show, like, you know, treat your concierge is nice because they're going to do these kinds of crazy things for you. And just, you know, what it will take sometimes to get our guests what they want. We want to make sure they have that great experience. So, yeah, a handful of my friends and I went down to the Superdome and woke up the day at the Dome, and we were successfully able to get tickets to a Rolling Stones concert that got canceled.
That got canceled, right, exactly. Well, it was good up until that point, right? And the point I wanted to make
exactly.
The point that I wanted to make here, too, Lee, is I think, like, you know, especially, I'm sure not every concierge is on your plane, but the good ones like yourself, it's a very hands-on thing. It's not like you're just, because I think this is maybe what some people think, you just say, oh, yeah, here's a brochure, here's this tour, yeah, go check out this place. It's like, you guys will make dinner reservations, or you guys will go that that extra mile and work your networks to get people experiences and things. And so it's a very hands-on job, correct?
Oh, definitely. I mean, and it is. It's very hands-on. It's a lot of building relationships with, those restaurants or with the tour vendors and going on those tours ourselves. I know that ghost tours are extremely popular in New Orleans, but I think if I have to go on one more in the next year, I'm going to cry because I always try to check them out and, see what the company's offering, see, how they run things, if everything's up and up. But the number of tours and things like that we go on just for research and just to make sure that what we're offering to our guests is a quality experience every time. I think every concierge in the city, and around the world probably has some kind of crazy story about what they've done, whether it's, picking up 75 balloons at Rouse's to bring in for a guest, or going over to a restaurant to personally schmooze with to get that key 7:30 dinner reservation. It's a lot more than just standing behind the desk handing out brochures.
Right. So let me ask you this, because just to kind of shift gears on you here, Leah, in the last half of the segment or so that we have today with you, obviously, like so many industries, but in particular, it's very acute with the hospitality industry, of course, of which the hotel world is part of, and it's even more acute here in New Orleans. You guys have been greatly affected. I know you personally have been affected by what's been going on. And I know that, for example, I think New Orleans has about 92,000, that's the latest estimate I've seen, of hospitality workers in the city, and that chunk, about 11 to 12,000 of those at least are in the hotel industry. So you just either however you want to take this, but from your own personal angle or just even some anecdotal stuff, conversations you've had with friends, obviously greatly affected. And then what are y'all feeling right now?
It's a lot of hurry up and wait, I guess, is probably the main feeling. We're all, a little bit frustrated by the fact that, everyone, of course, not knowing how long this is going to last, when it's going to end, when we want to get to go and see our coworkers again. It's tough, and the unknowing is one of the hardest parts about it. Thankfully, in this day and age, we can all keep touch with each other. We had a virtual board meeting for the board members of the Concierge Association, but even just with my coworkers, keeping in touch with each other. My hotel is one of the ones that is still open, although it's down to, complete skeleton crew. So it's just a lot of uncertainty and a lot of just trying to keep each other motivated and keep each other sane. I'm so blessed to have a wonderful network of coworkers that I talk to a handful of them every single day. We have numerous group chats going, and it's just kind of waiting to see what happens and how long this lasts. It, for a lot of us, was very unexpected, and I, had my couple of days off, and then the night before I was supposed to go back to work and resume my work week, I, found out that we would all been furloughed. So it's a lot of changing, things change so quickly and happen so quickly that I think it kind of took us all a few days to process it.
Hold on one second. That last part you just said, kind of broke up there. Can you say that again?
Oh, no, sorry. I was just saying that it's a very fluid situation. It happened so fast. Everything changed so fast. And now we're all kind of just waiting to see what happens next.
Right. Now, so you guys are like where you are, and I'm assuming, because technically a lot of listeners may not know this, that hotels have been listed as an essential business, so you can operate, but the numbers, we don't have tourists here. I'm guessing it's just to be able to put a few number of people up, we have doctors and nurses coming in now from out of town and stuff to help out, that's, a lot of how this is, an essential business travel and that sort of thing. So are there actually, I'm guessing that maybe have some people ceased operations entirely? I know, like you said, you guys have a skeleton crew going on, but...
Yeah, our hotel has it. We have limited, even though the hotel itself is still open, services are very limited. Obviously, the bar is closed. The fitness center is closed. So a lot of the amenities that we normally have aren't open right now, just because you know, it's there's so few guests in the hotel also to really justify having things like that open. But there are a number of hotels that have completely closed. The ones that are still open, yeah, I mean, it's mostly for other essential travelers, which there aren't a whole lot of. So even once this is done, it's not just, okay, you know, the shelter in place order has expired. We can all go out again. It's also going to be how quickly tourism comes back. And that's the thing that we have to really wait on and see. Right. When travel picks up again, when people are traveling, you know, it's often that anytime there's any kind of major economic disruption, hotels kind of take a while to bounce back from that because all of our potential guests are in the same boat we are, either furloughed, not working regular hours, you know, economically, a lot of people aren't going to be able to travel right after this is all done with.
Yeah, right. So people need lead time, right? I mean, because like we do a lot of convention business, of course, in the city. And when people plan a vacation, it's not like you plan a vacation most of the time and go out of town tomorrow. So that bounce back time is people are planning their vacations 6 months out. In the case of conventions, oftentimes exactly. A year or two or 3 years out.
Exactly right. That's what we're looking at right now with this. I know a lot of the festivals that are normally, you know, taking up every single weekend this time of year, have been moved back to the fall and in late summer. So it's looking like, you know, fingers crossed that will be a very busy time in New Orleans, and that will give enough people, you know, enough time for the pandemic to really die off. Wow, that's a terrible phrase, but
yeah, I hope the virus dies off. That's totally cool.
The virus, uh-huh,
absolutely.
I'm like, oh my god. Hope the virus, you know, enough time for the virus to go away, sure. And then enough time for people to start planning those trips that they were supposed to take over the spring.
Now, one thing I can say in regard to that, Leah, is, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I promise you in particular, because I know you, as well as I'm sure all of your colleagues and your operations, everybody will be ready for that to open their doors and welcome people back to New Orleans with big smiles, right?
I think we're going to hug the first 100 guests that come to the door. I'm going to be so happy to see them.
right. Awesome. I look forward to that day, too. Well, Leah, do me a favor, because we got about 45 seconds left. Can you tell people how they can find out more about concierges in general? And I guess a great portal for it is tell them how they can go connect with the New Orleans Concierge Association.
Absolutely. We have a Facebook presence. We're the New Orleans, just look up New Orleans Concierge Association. You'll find us there. And you can also go on our website, which is www.neworleansconcierge.org. And you can connect with us either of those ways. Make sure to like our Facebook page, and you can also send emails through the website. So either of those, if you ever want to reach out to us, please do, and I promise you'll be answered promptly, because we have nothing better to do now.
Right, perfect. Well, Leah, thank you so much for the time. I really appreciate it, and we'll be in touch soon. I'm looking forward to having a tipple or two with you as soon as possible as we do around
that
town.
Great.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, take care, and I really appreciate it, okay?
Thanks, Brian. Thanks so much for having me on today. Have a great day.
My pleasure. Friends, we're going to take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show, and we're going to be back with another good pal, Maggie Campbell. Come on back.
Sitting here, la la, waiting for my ya-ya.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with the WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Thanks for listening into the show, friends. And as you know, we are now chatting with my friend Maggie Campbell up there in north of Boston. Maggie is the president and head distiller of Privateer Rum, a fine craft rum producer up in that neck of the woods. She's a master of wine candidate. She is the vice president of the American Craft Spirits Association. I just learned a beekeeper as well as a part-time sea witch. How are you, Maggie?
I'm doing well, thanks.
It's great. Thanks for making time. How's life up there north of Boston?
You know, it's really lovely. It's spring. Everything is starting to flower. The apple orchard is coming into bloom. It's really lovely outside.
Awesome. Cool. And we're all making the best of what we got right now. I know you are too. We talked a couple days ago. And a side note too, I want to encourage listeners, go to our website, noladrinks.com. Check out the show. I want to say last August or so that we taped during Tales of the Cocktail, because we did a fantastic show of which you were a part of, Maggie. And we talked about inclusivity in the hospitality and spirits industry. So I want people to go back, because I think there is nothing that we discussed in that interview that is not still 100% relevant today.
True. It was a great chat.
Oh, thank you. That was really a lot of fun then. And we're going to have a great chat now, I hope. I know we will. You'll be good. I may fail, but we'll figure out how that goes.
I don't know. I'm a sea witch. We could see how this goes.
Awesome. Well, Maggie, so you are the head distiller and the president of Privateer Rum, a very fine rum maker. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that just in general? And then I kind of want to get to kind of what you guys are up to currently these days, given our COVID-19 situation.
Yeah. So we're a small, independently owned local distillery out here on the North Shore of Boston, making sort of traditional New England style rum. Everything from scratch. We get the molasses in fresh, so cane to glass. We ferment, distill, and age everything on site here in our sort of beautiful North Atlantic maritime climate that we've got.
Very nice. So how many do you guys make different styles and different flavor profiles of rum? Or are you guys kind of focusing on a single one?
Yeah, so we make a New England white rum, which is sort of our really great mixable rum. We have two sort of expressions, our true American, as well as we're coming out with a New England reserve rum. And those are blends of rums from about, 2 to 5 years age. Mm. And then we have a series of cask strength, single cask, our Navy Yard, and our Queen Share. Mm. And then we have sort of our single barrel selection under our Letters of Mark and our Distiller's Drawer collection.
Oh, wow. Okay. Those all sound delicious. And actually, this is a problem that we can rectify at a later time. I have never had the opportunity to taste Privateer rum. So,
And there's like many a secret stock down there in your town. So I can tip you off onto some of the people I know have a little bit of a library. And also we'll just get you set up with your own once this is all over and we're able to have that conviviality and go visit some great local places together.
That sounds fantastic. Definitely looking forward to that in a big way, having you back down here again. You do come here to New Orleans quite a bit when you can, right? I know that you're not just sort of here for Tales of the Cocktail. We have a lot of mutual friends in town.
We do, and my grandparents are from New Orleans.
Oh.
There's actually a really beautiful photo of my grandmother when she's 3 years old in 1919 getting ready for Mardi Gras. It's one of our favorite family heirlooms.
Oh,
so,
no
yeah,
way.
I've got roots down there.
Oh, wow. No, are they yeah. from New Orleans proper or kind of the surrounding area?
So sort of born and raised surrounding area, but then moved to New Orleans, kind of started their own little business, and yeah, grew up out of there. And actually, it was really special. The last time I was at Commander's, T. Martin came over because my grandfather used to go there a lot and kind of had like his table. And so it was kind of cool to like reconnect there. I got a little teary eyed. So.
Oh, that's awesome. They do that right at Commander's Palace, don't they? Looking forward to getting back there too very soon. Well, Maggie, let me ask you this, because we were talking about something really interesting the other day when we were setting up the interview, and you told me, like, and I've heard other distilleries are doing this, but you guys are moving into helping out with the COVID-19 situation and distilling high-proof spirits, but you guys were doing something a little different to make sure that it was more effective and basically being done the right way. Can you tell people what you're up to there?
Yeah, absolutely. So we, our founder and CEO, Andrew Cabot, he started contacting different people in the government and different hospitals and, saying, this is what we have. We're happy to bring it to whomever can work with it most, because most of the laws about how to compound and create sanitizer is aimed at pharmacists and doctors, because it requires really specific packaging because it's so high in alcohol. It can start to erode the packaging and dissolve the packaging. And, you know, it has to have efficacy, right? Would there be anything worse than someone who's an amateur compounding their own sanitizer and it not having efficacy and people relying on it for their health? So he started contacting people directly, and we began delivering high-proof alcohol directly to the hospitals and directly to pharmacies. We've made multiple drops, a couple repeat drops. It's interesting because it has to be really high strength. So a lot of what we donated happens to be what we were distilling at the time, which is our Queen Share rum. It usually sells for about $50 a bottle, and we've donated over 50 gallons. So that's about 50 cases of rum for us. So it feels great to be able to pitch in and help with what we have. So we did that. We donated some of our safety gear. We're a distillery, so we have dust masks and all sorts of stuff. So I know that Andrew went through and kind of left one of everything critical behind and donated everything else that we could. And that's been really, really helpful as well to be able to just feel like we can do anything to support, you know, these brave people who are on the front lines. I know you have close contacts in that situation. It's so scary, and we want to do everything we can to support them.
That's awesome. That's really cool. And I appreciate what you're saying, because I'm seeing so many people jump into the game, and I know that their heart's in the right place, but if they're not handling what they're providing to people to make, is if it's not done right, it's not going to work. Like you said, efficacy, that is so important. And thank you for shedding light on that. Before we take a break, Maggie, in about 2.5 minutes, you're also doing something else that's super awesome that I've been digging. And I've gotten through the first one. I got to do the second and third one. You're teaching some online American Sign Language courses, and kind of with an emphasis on hospitality industry, but I think it's really valid for, you know, just nice pleasantries and things like that. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. I'm always nervous. I don't want to get, like, you know, into the productivity trap, but also, like, I'm a doer. I'm a maker. It makes me feel good to create things. And so this is like a little offhand skill, you know, that I learned ASL a long time ago, and I've had different people kind of ask me for a couple tips on the occasion that they happen to know that I studied it. And so I just thought, you know what, this is something simple I can do. Get it out there. You don't really find videos or resources, because I always like to point people towards the true professionals, but you don't find a lot just aimed at restaurant conversations. And so I thought, you know, if we can take this time and learn a skill that, like, helps bartenders come back stronger and more qualified, and more ready to kind of fulfill a bigger role maybe at their company, like, all the better. So just trying to offer what it is we have as a really small company to support bartenders in continuing to grow, because it's so important to them. They're such growth-oriented, skills-oriented people. So being able to offer something, and it's been interesting. I've connected with all sorts of people I didn't know also knew ASL, including, like, one of my closest friends in the rum industry. We're just like, wait, you do this? I do this. We could have been doing this whole time.
Isn't that funny? There's all kinds of, you and I were talking about this the other day. There's all these things that you're sort of coming up with, and all those spare listeners here, just conversations I've had with collaborators and stuff. But it's like, why the hell didn't we think of this in the first place? We should be doing this during normal times.
Right. It's all the things that I wish I had time to do. It's like, I want to come out of this having done some of those things.
Yeah. Well said. And it's really neat. We've been sharing them on, you're on, well, listeners hear this, maybe the fourth one will be out. I know the third one's out. We've been sharing them on our Facebook page. So if you're cool with that, Maggie, I'll just encourage anybody out there just to, you know, go check out our Facebook page, and you can see the super cool lessons. And before we take a break here in about 30 seconds, I also want to make sure that when people check out the ASL lessons, some of the t-shirts and sweatshirts that you're wearing, the the wardrobe game is strong. I'm going to just, I'll leave it like that.
My pajamas are very flashy.
We only see you from the waist up, so it's totally cool. Well, let's do this, friends.
We're going to take
a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show. We're going to chat a little bit more with Maggie. In this next segment, we're going to talk about the American Craft Spirits Association, friends. Come on back.
My flag boy and your flag boy sitting by the fire. My flag boy to your flag boy, I'm gonna set your flag on fire. Talking about here now. Here now.
right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for listening in, friends, this week. As always, we're chatting with our pal Maggie Campbell up there north of Boston. Maggie, actually, what is the name of the sleepy fishing village that you live in, actually?
It is Ipswich.
Oh, you live in Ipswich.
Massachusetts.
Oh, I didn't know. Okay, right on. Okay, right on. Cool. Awesome. Well, so Maggie, one of the things that I wanted to ask you too, among your many other credentials of which we ran down a few at the beginning of the interview, you're the vice president of the American Craft Spirits Association. And would you tell us a little bit about what the organization does and kind of what your role is?
Yeah, thanks. It is the only not-for-profit trade organization representing independently held small-scale distillers in the U.S. And so we do a number of things. We've been really, really active in trying to change some of the laws that are really outdated around alcohol. We've been working together with the TTB in sort of what we're doing right now, a lot of the discussion around how spirits are categorized and labeled, as well as, you know, producing a lot of information on safety. That's a big emphasis for me. A lot of safety training for distillers, as well as skills development, educational resources. And right now we're doing a lot of work with the very fast changing laws around this COVID-19. A lot of the hand sanitizer laws, taxation changes, where and when and how can you sell alcohol now? Some states are shutting it down completely and some states are really liberalizing their laws. You can have a Go Cup in New York City now.
So. Oh, I didn't know that. No, I hadn't heard that yet. Okay. Yeah. Finally, they're catching on after however many, two centuries? Yeah, okay, cool. Okay.
So, yeah, there's a lot of work there. And I'm on my second term as an elected member of the board. And, yeah, serving my second term as vice president.
That's really cool. So how often do you guys, again, just sort of considering all things, if they were normal, how often do you convene as a board? Because I'm assuming as a board member, there is a staff with the organization. So you guys are providing guidance and input, correct?
Absolutely. We've got an incredible core staff. It's really wonderful. Our CEO, Margie Lehrman, if Leslie Knope is a human being, it is this woman. She's incredible. And she can do more work than any human being on earth in the shortest amount of time. And so we probably get on an entire board call every few months, and then we meet in person. We do a board retreat, and then we also do our distillers convention, so twice a year. So right now we are actually supposed to be in Portland, Oregon, hosting, you know, a 1500 person distillers convention that of course is no longer happening and been postponed to the fall. So yeah, it's a pretty vibrant organization, and I also run their not-for-profit spirits judging competition every year, which we just had the online awards gala for, as opposed to doing it in person.
Oh, cool. So, let's talk about that a little bit. So people, they'll submit their craft spirits. I'm assuming that has to be domestic here in the States, right? Or can it be broader?
Well, so all of our members are from the U.S.,
yep,
but we accept international entries because, you know, spirits aren't tasted in a vacuum. When someone goes to a store, they're trying everything. So it can be international. We've accepted international entries for a few years, but they do still have to be qualifying as a member. So small scale, independently held, and stuff like that. So yeah, it's been really wonderful. It generates a lot of really meaningful and detailed feedback. One of the New Orleans local, Wayne Curtis, he's one of our judges every year, comes on up from New Orleans to let people know about rum. So yeah.
That's really cool. So just maybe give us a little flavor for a minute. What were you kind of seeing? Who won? I mean, we're seeing such a diversity, I think, of craft spirits in the country. Maybe we can springboard to that part of the conversation. A lot of really cool people making some really cool things.
Yeah, we definitely saw some very, very original things, as always. There's always a few things each year where, like, how do we put this into a flight? It's so original. So we have our traditional awards, and then we also offer an innovation award for some of the more creative stuff we see. So saffron-based Amaro was one of the innovation awards this year. And our best in show winner was a brandy, which is really exciting. You know, I think most people assume it's going to be a whiskey, but it was a brandy this year, which was really wonderful.
That's really neat. Do you want to tell who was that? Are you okay? So can we say that now?
You know, I think the press release is still rolling out at about the time that we're recording this.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Well, people won't hear it till next week. But how about this? We'll make a deal. Will you send me, make sure I get the press release across my desk, and then people can will satiate their curiosity that way. How's that?
Absolutely. Okay. I will absolutely send that.
Perfect. So do you guys do it where, like, you kind of, do you break it down by, this, like, say, rum, whiskey, blah, blah, blah? Is that how it kind of works? And then, or?
Yeah. So we'll have, like, we'll usually have about 40 to 50 judges, and then we'll have different panels. So, like, panels of 4 or 5 people. And so there'll be a rum panel, and they'll taste all the rums, and there'll be a couple whiskey panels. So when we do the final winners for whiskey, we actually pull all the tables together so that they all agree on who should be best in show and who should win the top award. But all the panels are together. We have a panel for brandy and a panel for gin, and they get these tasting sheets, and they fill out very detailed notes and very detailed feedback on appearance, aroma, intensity, finesse, and kind of give it an overall score that kind of ends up going into the final ranks of where it falls within the competition.
That's cool. How many, and if you said this already, I apologize, how many entrants did you all have this year?
Oh, we get hundreds and hundreds every year. It's wonderful. So yeah, it takes us about 2.5 very full days of just straight wake up in the morning, eat breakfast, get to tasting. We're really lucky that, you know, we follow some of the most stringent policies to give the most honest feedback. That's something I'm very, very, very dedicated to, ensuring that all the results are fair. And yeah, that everyone gets really meaningful feedback. Because for us and a lot of producers, I think one of the greatest things on the scorecard is, would you pour this for a peer? So it's asking the judges, like, would you share this with someone? Mm. Because for us, we don't have marketing budgets. I really, really rely on someone loving what I love, what I do, and saying, hey, you want to try this? I have this. So I think we offer some really cool perspectives to a lot of our entrants.
That's a great question. And I mean, having done, professional wine evaluation myself and cocktail judging and things like that, that's a great question. Would you recommend it to a peer? I think that's probably the most telling question, isn't it, actually?
Right?
I love that. Can I steal that if I ever need to? Is that cool?
Please do. Yeah, actually, I was just realizing Jason Zeno, the head distiller for Porch Jam there in New Orleans.
Yep.
He's one of our judges as well.
Oh, yeah,
and he came from Jim Beam. Yeah.
Yeah, right on.
Yeah.
Well, Maggie, we got about a minute and a half, 2 minutes before we close out the radio portion of the show. You're going to stick around for another shot with Nola Drinks, our podcast-only segment. We're going to get into more of the craft spirits business and a couple other bits and bobs there. But can you tell people where they can connect with Privateer Rum, and if they want to learn more about the American Craft Spirits Association, where they can find out about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So at Privateer Rum on Instagram is a really great place to find us. We also have Privateer Rum on Facebook and our website, privateerrum.com. Me personally, it's easiest to get a hold of me on Instagram at halfpintmaggie. My email address is right in my bio, so you can easily reach me. I'm one of the most accessible people in rum. and then for the American Craft Spirits Association, their website, the American Craft Spirits Association, is a really great resource. They've made a bunch of stuff open and available beyond our membership in this sort of really difficult and challenging time we're all facing. And they also have an online presence as well on Instagram and Facebook as well.
Very cool. And we'll keep people posted too when the conference gets rescheduled. Not that most people are going to go, but just so we kind of know what happens from it. So we'll let people know in the fall when that's coming up as well. And like I said, you're going to stick around for another shot with Nola Drinks. So Maggie, hang tight for 1 second. Friends, I do want to encourage you to go to noladrinks.com to get the podcast if you are listening on the radio, because that's the only way you're going to hear my conversation continue with Maggie, and you're going to want to hear it. And and I do want to remind everybody out there, especially all of us here in New Orleans and everyone everywhere, please listen to competent officials. I think we know who we're talking about here, and do what you're supposed to do. Be a good neighbor, be a good family member, be a good citizen of both this country, and if you're listening anywhere, a good citizen of the world at such an important time right now. But friends, if you are listening on the radio, remember to be kind to one another, use your turn signal, and until next time, cheers, y'all.
inside. What are you doing in a place like this? I said I called your name, but no one came. Now I see you become just like the company you keep. And he said, all these saints and all these sinners will try.
Thanks for sticking around for another shot with Nola Drinks, friends. I do appreciate it. As always, I hope you are enjoying the conversation we are having with Maggie Campbell. We're going to bounce right back into that chat with her and talk a little further, talk about her candidacy for a Master of Wine and some other stuff about talking about production of spirits, some tasting stuff, talk a little bit more about the craft spirits industry in the U.S. And I also hope you enjoy the conversation that we had with Leah Hoyt at the top of the show. So we're going to bounce right back over to our phone call with Maggie Campbell. Here we go. All right, everybody, up another shot with Nola Drinks. We're chatting here with our good pal, Maggie Campbell. And Maggie, we were talking a little bit about various things that you do, and one that we didn't get to during the radio portion of the show, and I do want to talk about the spirits industry, craft spirits industry a bit and some other things. But you're a candidate for Master of Wine. Is that which organization are we talking about?
Yeah, the Institute of Masters of Wine. Yep. So a lot of people know the sommeliers, the court, that's more service. The yep. Institute is more research technical.
Mm-hmm. That's very cool. Now, did you have a past, I mean, just beyond being like in the industry, do you have a past connection to the wine industry and wine in general?
Yeah. So I was, I mean, filling is my, the industry is my first career. I got really interested in distilling when I was 20 and came back to the States. I was visiting Scotland.
Oh.
Realized like, oh, this is a job people do. I could totally do this. And of course, you know, returning in that era, there was no big, vibrant craft distilling community. There were no like technical schools, nothing like that. So I went and I studied wine and I learned all about how to taste different casks to create a blend and how to identify quality and how to professionally taste and how to ferment things and what to look for and how would you define a flaw, things like that. Mm-hmm. So learned all about wine and started working in wine, and that's how I got really interested in coming back again to spirits was sort of working with people who wanted to buy a lot of nicer wines. They'd always eventually ask about stocking their bar, and I realized I had some background. I knew how spirits were made and had been to a distillery and understood it, and I could kind of get really good at that and maybe get some of the better clients and do some of the more fun work. And so I just started visiting local distilleries. And at the time, thank goodness, I was in Denver, Colorado, where Stranahan's was really early out of the gate craft distillery. Leopold Brothers was just in the process of relocating to Denver, Colorado. And so I got a really, really good chance to get my foot in the door very early. And then when the Siebel Institute offered their very first course in craft distillation technology, Todd Leopold came into the place where I was selling wine and said, you know, I just saw this. I really think you should do it, and really pushed me to actually go in school to get a certificate. Cause I was like 23 at the time. So it was not going to be easy for me to get a job as like a plucky 23-year-old woman being like, I can make whiskey. So having that piece of paper went a long way for me. It really did.
That's really cool. Let me ask you this question, because and you know this about me, and listeners know this too. If they've listened to the show long enough, I have a pretty strong background in wine professionally, and my parents had a small vineyard in California, and I did various things in the industry out there for a number of years. And I'm always kind of like surprised. There's always seems to be in many quarters anyway, this sort of divide, I guess I'll say. You know, people are like either spirits people, or they're wine people, or they're beer people. And I know there's a lot of exception to that, but it always kind of catches me off guard where, you know, I'm dealing with somebody who's, say, like a pretty high level spirits person, and they'll like say, I don't know anything about wine. And I had a bartender, a couple bartender friends of mine. This is going back 3 years ago or so when I first started the show, and a very talented bartender here in New Orleans. And I loved what he said, because we were talking about, you know, flavor is flavor. And I always viewed it, Maggie, that like my experience in wine on that level, when I started to get more into spirits, always kind of into beer, but, and cooking and all these other things, that, you know, flavor is flavor. And it's sort of like these skills are, obviously you have to know the technical aspects, I think, and stuff, but the, you know, some of the basic skills and knowing how to taste and knowing how to evaluate, I don't find them to be that different. How do you feel?
I think it's the best possible cross training I could ever do. And I advance my knowledge so much exponentially by learning one versus the other. And so for me, I also have a background in beer. My husband and I, back when we were just friends, founded the Denver Brewers League, and I actually won the Denver Women's Brewsters Brewing Competition.
No way. All right, I got to write down another thing in my notebook about what to call you.
Okay. Yeah, so my husband and I actually started as brewing partners, as friends. And then, of course, I learned wine as well, worked in wine this whole time. And then when I went to, so I distilled, because you mentioned Northern California, do you know the tiny village of Ukiah?
Very well. Yeah, sure.
So I lived and worked in Ukiah.
Oh, no way.
I worked at Germain Robin, which was founded by this fifth generation cognac distiller. So we would go out to the vineyards, measure grapes, work with winemakers to make wine to distill into these cognac style spirits. So I got to be a part of winemaking and then distill it. So to me, it's like seamless.
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
But I find, you know, definitely like over the years it's changed, whereas definitely when I first started at the Masters of Wine, it was like, there are more people who have been into outer space than become Masters of Wine. You're a distiller. Why are you doing this? This isn't like for fun. And I'm like, no, this is part of my profession. And it's funny, over the last few years, more and more of them come to me and go, okay, so my company is getting really serious about fine spirits. I don't know what everyone is talking about. What does this mean? And so it's been kind of cool to see it like coming together and having stuff that's more crosses over. But, you know, for a lighthearted example, you know, I was studying sherry, and in one region, they put water on the floor of the barrel aging facility because it keeps the air humid. Mm. So when the air is humid, less water evaporates out of the cask, and it doesn't allow the alcohol to get too high, because they don't want the alcohol to get high. Mm-hmm. And then in cognac, they will have cellars that they build very close to the water table in a more humid environment, because they don't want the alcohol or the water to be evaporating as much. And they want to kind of keep that alcohol low. So it's the same thing. That's a very random detail, but you'll just see it across everything. You know, when I talk to a blender in Oporto to make port wine, or a champagne blender, or even a blender in Bordeaux, we're talking the exact same language when we talk about selecting casks and, you know, how do we determine what's our first label and our second label and what's ready and what's not.
Yeah, that's the really, really great points. It's really interesting. And I think you obviously come from such a strong production background. And that's actually, I always tell people, more of my background being that my family had a vineyard, and actually not too far from Ukiah, I used to consult for the Lake County Wine Grape Commission on various fronts.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah. So I was, you know, highly involved with those guys up there for a few years and stuff. And so, you know, I always joke with people, because I tell people, if you want me to rattle off a list of chateaux and, you know, where they're Grand Cru, Premier Cru, whatever, I am not your guy. If you want me to taste a wine and tell you why it tastes how it does because of how it was made, I'm your guy. And I just don't come from that sort of historical background per se. And it's not that somm background. I come from a production background, and not that I'm not poo-pooing either one. They're just different, I think.
They're totally different. And in the Masters of Wine, we get asked, you know, describe the role of yeast in this wine. Mm. And they give us a blind sample.
Yeah.
So for us, it's much more like what you're saying. We care more about how the wine is built and what is it telling us, and what decisions were made, and how could you alter those decisions to create a different wine. Mm-hmm. I find that so much more interesting. And it's so important as a distiller to be able to taste your product and say, I like this. This is where it came from. And you know what? I don't like this flavor, and that's where that came from, and mm-hmm. that's what I can change. Mm-hmm. And with the lack of experience in a lot of, you know, new distilling regions and areas, that can be an issue.
I think that's a great point, because I think people, you know, people make a lot of mistakes out of the gate. You know this too. I had done some work in Texas in the wine industry there briefly. And, you know, people start out where they'll plant what they, I forget how he used to always say it, but they'll plant what they think that they're supposed to plant as opposed to plant what they should plant. And so it's like,
you
can't force feed Pinot Noir into Texas. It just doesn't grow there. But, you know, shorter growing seasons, certain Italian varietals, some things like that, can perform tremendously there in the foothills and things. And it is always that process. And I see the same thing, like to your point in distilling, that people come in, they're kind of modeling themselves off of something, and we all have to find our own voice, don't we? Maybe that's the way to put it.
Yeah, and it's, you know, maybe not what we're supposed to do, but what is going to be successful. And I think for me in my life, you know, being a little bit more scrappy, I always got to ask myself, like, what's working with me? And, you know, that's why I ended up in distilling, is these doors just kept opening because it happened to be the right time. You know, I was just like, oh, this is working well with me. I'll do this. And that's why, you know, maybe I'm not a wine professional or a professional beekeeper or a bread baker or whatever.
Wait, do I need to write bread maker down too? You can the list keeps getting longer, Maggie. Oh, that's great. Well, let me ask you this here. Can we get back to the craft spirits, the American Craft Spirits Association? I just wanted to touch on that a little more in regards to the industry. Kind of, you know, what do we see the landscape? We certainly have had a proliferation of craft distillers. I think we know that in the country and elsewhere, and all these different flavor profiles, all these wonderful new products. But maybe give us kind of the short version. What was the lay of the land before we kind of hit this situation, or just the lay of the land in general?
Yeah, I think the lay of the land was really exciting. There were finally a meaningful number of producers. You know, you would hear people say, like, is there too much craft? But when you look at sales by volume, like, craft is not what there's too much of. And, you know, for me, when I go into a nice restaurant and I look at the wine list, I'm not going to see these, like, big bulk brands. And I'm not going to look at the beer list and see these big bulk brands. But when I look behind the bar, I'm still seeing the really big, high volume brands. I'm not seeing the artisans and the craft people. And so, you know, I thought we were at a really, really lovely tipping point. Now with COVID, there's some serious things facing our industry. You know, bars and restaurants shutting down has been really, really difficult for a lot of people. For us being based in Massachusetts, that happened very quickly for us. And, you know, some states have shut down all retail. And
Maggie, let me ask you that, because I think I want to put a finer point, if I can, on the one thing you just said. I think with, like, a lot of craft stuff, beer and small wine producers and things, but certainly with craft spirits, a lot of the ways that people learn and connect with them, if I'm not mistaken, are, like, you go to a bar that has a good craft cocktail program, that's usually your first interface with some of these craft spirits. And so that's a huge vector for people to learn about it and then maybe want to go get it themselves or add it to their own restaurant. Or whatever. Is that a fair characterization?
Oh, absolutely. Bartenders are incredible storytellers, and they love to share what they're excited about. I mean, they're such community-based people. Sharing and connection is so important. You know, I'm a distiller. I love being locked in my warehouse all day with my stereo up with two other people. But I definitely have, like, my dear friends I love, and they're so social, and they thrive off of that energy. And for us, when they get excited about what we do, you know, it means so much to us that they share that with their community, with each other, and with their guests. And that's often when people say, I had your stuff for the first time. It's usually the story of a bartender. They're really the heartbeat of what it is we do in our business.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. So I'm sorry, I didn't want to derail what you were saying. I just want to make sure people understood that's so much such a critical interface for craft producers.
Yeah, absolutely. And so we're really fortunate to have our retail partners as well, and we're trying to do everything we can to support them. And it's hard. People are very understandably and very rightly concerned about going out. You know, people should be safe. They should stay home. They should go out minimally and on as few trips as possible. And a lot of people are just, you know, really worried about our financial future. And the idea of buying a special bottle as a treat is really difficult. But in looking forward, I think that, you know, it's going to be a really hard period of time. We're sort of in this era right now where we're getting this SBA loan program and stimulus coming online, but it's not totally clear what it all means and what it means for everyone. So I think it's still a little cloudy. I would like to think that, you know, for me, I want us to have a sustainable existence as a business and as a community and environmentally. And so I'm really excited about, you know, us coming back with a, you know, maybe drink less, but drink better, you know, kind of mentality that, you know, instead of having drink after drink and bucket of ice after bucket of ice, it's, you know, a nice thoughtful cocktail that's really pleasing and really satisfying. And, you know, and then restaurants can charge what they need to charge to make money. I think a lot of us are realizing people have worked really hard for a long time to run these businesses and work in these businesses, and they deserve to be paid well. And a lot of them, you know, are closing their doors without a lot of savings, if any. And I think they deserve better than that. And so hopefully we can build a future with, you know, really exciting experiences and something that's really special. And so I'm hoping, you know, it'll be a whole new, we can come back fresh. It'll be a whole new world. So, we're really trying to see what we can do in the meantime to help support restaurants here in Massachusetts as far as changing laws about being able to get to-go cocktails and things like that, support our bar partners now. And then, of course, once the ice begins cracking, I think things might be different for a long time, if not forever, you know, seeing where we fit in that and how we can best, you know, use the agility in our business to meet the needs of what it is people, you know, need the support from us to be.
Right. Well said, Maggie. Thank you. I really appreciate that. You and I were talking about some of these different things. I'd love to have you back on the show again soon if you're up for that, because we talked about a whole bunch of stuff on the phone the other day, just kind of catching up. But as you know, and everybody out there listening to the show knows, you know, we've been talking a lot about some of the issues that you just brought up, and we'll continue to talk about them. So I would certainly love to have you back sooner than later, more so. We'd love to have you down here sooner than later, but we'll cross that bridge when we get to it, because we have to go out to Middendorf and have a thin fried catfish. We did talk about that the other day,
too. Yeah, that man shack. I'm into it.
Right on. We're going to go tap into some of that rum collection about with you-know-who. I'm going to send him an email, as I told you, after I get off the phone. I won't name names, but he's been on the show a lot, and he owns a tiki bar in the French Quarter. All right, there you go.
I was texting him this morning, so.
Oh, okay. Right on.
We should get your message. Uh-huh. He's not getting it. He should be getting it.
Okay, good to know. That's why we're definitely copying his significant other to make there's a public record, like I was telling you. Sorry, we're getting way off the rails here. Maggie, thank you so much. Do me a favor, one more time, tell people how to connect with Privateer Rum, and we need to talk about that more next time, but then and tell people where they can find out more about the ACSA.
Absolutely. So you can find us on Instagram at Privateer Rum, on Facebook as Privateer Rum and privateerrum.com. And to find me on Instagram at Half Pint Maggie, and the American Craft Spirits Association has a presence on both Instagram and Facebook, but their website has a lot of really great resources.
Awesome. Perfect. Maggie, thank you so much. I really do appreciate it. I do look forward to talking to you again, and hopefully seeing you in person sooner than later. So thanks for making some time today.
Thanks. I would be happy to come back. And thank you so much for taking the time to chat.
Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure, my friend. We're going to take a brief musical interlude here on the NOLA Drink Show, and I'll be back with my parting shot. All right, everybody. Hey, thanks for listening to the show. I do appreciate it, as always. Once again, I hope that everyone out there is as well as they can be. Hope you and yours are safe. I hope you and yours are practicing social distancing and doing everything that you need to do to be a responsible citizen locally, statewide, nationally, and globally. We're trying to do our best here on that front on the NOLA Drink Show. You may have noticed this show, last couple shows, we've done pretty much all of our interviews. No, not pretty much. All of our interviews have been done by phone. That is not our normal MO here on the program. As you know, one of the things that we really like to do is we do long form interview stuff. You know this if you listen to the show. I have no particular interest here as the host and editor of the NOLA Drink Show in listicle type stuff and short attention span theater stuff. There's a lot, and maybe I shouldn't knock it so much, but there's a lot of people out there who already do things like that really well. We like to get a guest or a group of guests and have a good amount of time to chat and get into subjects. But we're adapting like everybody else is. And, you know, one of the things that we're doing, as I just mentioned, is we're doing stuff by phone. We may actually do some stuff here and there in person if the subject material warrants, but you can be sure that we will be certain to maintain our proper social distancing. I have plenty of microphone cables and other things that are well more than 6 feet long. We'll see if that need arises. This may arise with stuff like tasting and some things that we want to bring to you, conversations where we're actually tasting stuff and letting you know things during this time that you can get for your home bar and stuff like that. We'll cross that bridge when we come to it. But one of the things I did also want to note is that as we do phone interviews, one of the things that I've found is that, you know, and I appreciate you as a listener sticking with the show. Phone interviews can be somewhat difficult, I think, to listen to. It's a lot easier as a host. It's a lot easier as an interviewer to do stuff in person because we can all read body language and I can move questions around easier to multiple guests just by sort of, you know, physical cues. That becomes very difficult when you do stuff by phone. And that's why we've been limiting more of our phone stuff to single guests. We're working on some technological things that may allow us to more easily manage a multi-guest conversation at the same time. Stay tuned for that. We're doing some testing on some equipment because I'm working out of my home studio here as opposed to working on site and taping live in venues like we usually, not live, but sort of live. We tape in venues on site. As I should say, and mostly taping here out of the home studio and operating where we're taking phone calls. So that's why you notice that typically, as we've done the past couple shows, had guests on one at a time and a slightly shorter segments than dedicating a whole show. Now, that may change. We may have more than one guest on for longer. We may have one guest on for longer. We've done that before by phone on the program, but we're adapting like everyone else is, and I want to thank you for sticking with us. I know probably listening to phone interviews for an extended period of time can be a little bit challenging for the listener, but we still will continue to bring you good guests. We're continuing to adapt as everyone else is, and we don't want to abandon our long-form interview format because that's what makes the NOLA Drink Show, in my view, what it is, and for you, the dedicated listener out there, why I think you listen to it. You can get the short-form stuff in any number of other places. You can get other types of coverage and other types of interviews in any other number of other places. But I think what we bring to you is pretty unique. Not a lot of people do what we do. So we are, I guess the take-home message here for the parting shot is we are simply just trying to figure it out like everybody else is, trying to remain true to who we are, trying to adapt to the situation, trying to be safe, trying to be good citizens. So I hope you all do the same. And again, please, please be kind to one another. Take care of one another. Do what you're supposed to do. Listen to competent officials. Hey, and be well. That's our parting shot. Here's to you.